Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal legal system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. On this edition of Prison Pipeline, we look at the global war on drugs. The United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs held its 69th session March 9th through 13th. Delegates from many of the world's nations, along with officials from UN agencies and representatives of non-governmental agencies and civil society, met in Vienna, Austria for a series of meetings. Let's start today's show with an overview of the world drug situation. Here's Chloe Carpentier, chief of the Research and Knowledge Production Section at the UN Office on Drugs and Crime.
So we estimate that 316 million people have used a drug in the past year. This is 28% more than a decade ago. Of course, because population grows, but also because drug use has increased. Most drugs continue to disproportionately be used by men. But in many countries now, we see that women are more engaged in the non-medical use of pharmaceutical drugs, such as pharmaceutical stimulants, sedatives, and tranquilizers. As far as the drugs are concerned, cannabis continues to be the most used drug, and it accounts for a substantial share of the health burden, together with opioids, which continue to be the most lethal drugs. We see an increasing diversification. This is what I wanted to show here, in what people are using, actually, from the drug market. So diversification from traditional plant-based drugs, such as cannabis, cocaine, and heroin, to amphetamine-type stimulants, but also synthetic opioids, for example, tramadol, fentanyls, also semi-synthetic cannabinoids, such as HHC, but also Delta-H, THC, and also we see a lot of ketamine now being used in different regions of the world, benzodiazepines, and other pharmaceutical drugs that are being misused, of course. And some of these drugs are controlled, but many of them are not controlled. They are NPS, the new psychoactive substances. And we see also an increasing diversification of the market with the apparition of mixtures of drug combinations that can contain any of the substances that are just mentioned, and that sometimes lead to acute emergency episodes, as the content of what people are taking is not always known to them, actually. As you know, adolescence is a critical time when the brain is still in development, and yet we see that this is the age when drug use starts in many parts of the world. And the levels of use in adolescents, 15, 16 years old, are sometimes very similar to adults, if not higher. This is what you see here, which is very concerning now. Out of these 316 million people who have used the drug in the past year, 64 million are suffering from drug use disorders, and only 8% of them, this is 1 in 12, have access to drug treatment. And the treatment gap remains much larger among women than among men, due to specific barriers for accessing treatment for women in particular. We also estimate that 14 million people inject drugs worldwide. Half of them are living with hepatitis C, and almost 1 in 8 are living with HIV. The risk of acquiring HIV is 14 times higher among people who inject drugs than in the wider population, and injecting drug use continues to be a significant driver of the global hepatitis C epidemic. And my last slide, I wanted to talk a bit about the global burden of disease related to drugs. So opioids, hepatitis C, HIV and AIDS make up most of the global burden of disease related to drugs. When we look at death, opioids continue to account for most of the overdoses, that is the direct drug-related death, But when we look at all the drug-related death, not only direct, then we see that cirrhosis and chronic liver diseases resulting from hepatitis C among people who use drugs and people who inject drugs continue to be the leading cause of death resulting from drug use altogether.
That was Chloe Carpentier, chief of the Research and Knowledge Production Section at the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, addressing the 69th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on Wednesday, March 11th. Now here's one of her colleagues, Dr. Justice Tetti, chief of the Drugs Laboratory and Scientific Services Branch at UNODC.
Since the adoption of the 2019 Ministerial Declaration, the illicit drug market has continued to expand in both speed and complexity. We have made progress, but many, many more challenges persist. We see criminal networks adapting quickly. Plant-based and synthetic drug markets are growing. Polydrug use is rising, and clandestine laboratories pose escalating risk to public health and security. This is indeed a global challenge. An action in one region, we see, can be weakened by vulnerabilities in another. Gaps in legislation, regulation, and technical capacity in health systems, forensic laboratories, detection technologies, and identification of new substances continue to undermine effective responses. Colleagues, stronger and more coordinated multilateral action is therefore essential. We must reinforce every link in the counter-narcotics chain, from early warning through forensic analysis, detection, seizure, investigation, and prosecution. Swift national implementation of international scheduling decisions remains fundamental, supported by updated laws, stronger laboratories, and coordinated enforcement. UNODC is committed to translating science into action. Through the United Nations Narcotics Laboratory and the Early Warning Advisory, we are helping member states identify emerging threats and exchanging critical information rapidly. We are also closing legislative and supply chain gaps, which are exploited by criminal groups and which drive and we're driving stronger public-private partnerships across the areas of finance, aviation, and the chemical industries. Through these efforts, we are guiding sharper, more coordinated national, regional, and global responses to synthetic drug threats. Yet, our approach remains fairly firmly health-centered and people-focused. Evidence-based prevention, especially initiatives that strengthen resilience amongst children and youth, is essential. For people who use drugs and those with drug use disorders, we support a recovery-oriented continuum of care, including treatment, harm reduction, rehabilitation, and long-term recovery support. And the high burden of preventable morbidity and mortality demands integrated services for HIV, hepatitis, overdose prevention and care, both in communities and in prisons. For people in contact with the criminal justice system, alternatives to conviction or punishment in appropriate cases can reduce recidivism and reinforce their recovery. And in many places, alternative development remains a vital investment in sustainable livelihoods and community resilience. Excellencies, distinguished delegates, the challenges are evolving, and our responses must evolve with equal speed and determination. We must continue turning science into action. We must strengthen forensics, early warning, and implementation of scheduling decisions. We must scale up health responses to reduce harm. And we must deepen multilateral cooperation to deliver on our shared commitments. I thank you.
That was Dr. Justice Tetti, chief of the Drugs Laboratory and Scientific Services Branch at UNODC, addressing the 69th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on Wednesday, March 11th. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. This week, we're listening to some of the highlights from the 69th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs, which took place in Vienna, Austria, from March 9th through 13th. We just heard two officials from the UN Office on Drugs and Crime deliver briefings to the CND on the world drug situation. The CND is the governing body of the UNODC. Delegates also heard from representatives of UN agencies. Let's hear from a couple of those. First, speaking on behalf of the UN's Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights and the UN International Independent Expert Mechanism to Advance Racial Justice and Equality in Law Enforcement, here's Dr. Tracy L. Kazee.
I'm Dr. Tracy Kazee, and it's an honor to address the Commission on Narcotics Drugs on behalf of the United Nations International Independent Expert Mechanism to Advance Racial Justice and Equality in Law Enforcement, EMLR. Established by the UN Human Rights Council in 2021, our mandate is clear: to examine systemic racism in law enforcement and the criminal justice system, and to support states in transforming these systems to uphold equality, dignity, and human rights for all. I would like to recall that in the CND Ministerial Declaration of 2019, all states committed to respect, protect, and promote all human rights, fundamental freedoms, and the inherent dignity of all individuals in the development and implementation of drug policies. Across our consultations, reports, and country visits in the past 4 years, we have consistently found that drug laws, policies, and their enforcement play a central role in perpetuating systemic racism and disproportionately harming Africans and people of African descent. These impacts manifest at every stage, from policing to arrest, prosecution, sentencing, incarceration, and post-release opportunity. They also generate profound stigma, undermining access to health care, employment, education, and broader social inclusion. Our findings are unequivocal. Punitive drug policies have been more effective as system of racial control than as tools to reduce drug markets. In many countries, disproportionate stop and search operations, racial profiling, and militarized drug enforcement create a climate of fear and lack of safety, undermining the trust in public institutions, which routinely lead to unlawful use of force, sometimes resulting in loss of life. These practices not only violate international human rights norms and standards, they also fail to achieve public safety objectives, instead exacerbating inequalities in health, housing, education, and employment. In many countries, the enforcement of drug policy leads to mass incarceration in which people of African descent are disproportionately affected, despite comparable rates of drug use across different ethnic and racial groups. Our forthcoming report to the Human Rights Council and the General Assembly will be the first UN human rights report dedicated to the issue of drugs and race. We will share findings about the scope, nature, and human rights impacts of this problem. Evidence shows that from Americas to Europe and parts of Asia, governments continue to implement drug control measures that disproportionately impact racialized communities, often operating without adequate oversight, transparency, or accountability mechanisms. We are also cognizant of human rights risks amplified by the use of technologies by law enforcement. For example, the use of artificial intelligence, predictive policing, and pretrial assessments is embedded historically racial biases in technology systems, creating a dangerous feedback loop where the harms of the past of over-policing predetermining the future, affecting marginalized racial, ethnic, and religious groups. Yet we also see hope. Around the world, states and communities are developing new approaches, from racial impact assessments and sentencing, to alternatives to detention, to protocols for adjudication with racial perspectives. These efforts demonstrate that change is not only possible, but already underway in different jurisdictions. Madam Chair, we encourage all members of states to act with urgency. As a minimum, we can call on states to do the following: end punitive approaches and adopt human rights-centered policies, eliminate racial profiling, collect and publish data disaggregated by race or ethnic origin, and additionally by other factors such as sex, gender, and age. Ensure access to voluntary, evidence-based treatment and harm reduction services. Strengthen oversight, transparency, and accountability mechanisms, including when AI is in use in law enforcement. And finally, place racial justice and equality at the center of the national drug strategies and international drug control oppressions. Excellencies and colleagues, the future of drug policy cannot repeat the injustices of the past. It must be rooted in human rights, equality, and non-discrimination, in evidence, and in lived realities of the communities most affected. We stand ready to support all states in advancing the essential work. I thank you.
That was Dr. Tracy L. Kazee speaking on behalf of the UN's Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights and the UN International Independent Expert Mechanism to Advance Racial Justice and Equality in Law Enforcement at the 69th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on Wednesday, March 11th. Now, also speaking on behalf of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, here's Dr. Albert K. Burume, Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
The mandate I hold as the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples requires me to examine how global policy frameworks, including drug control regimes, affect the rights, lives, and cultural integrity of Indigenous peoples. Today, I wish to highlight the urgent human rights implications of the continued classification of the coca leaf under Schedule 1 of the 1961 Single Convention, an issue that remains highly relevant as the CND considers matters linked to treaty implementation. First, the coca leaf is not a simple plant. It is a cornerstone of the cultural, spiritual, and medicinal traditions of millions of indigenous people in the Andean Amazon region. Its current international status has resulted in criminalization of traditional practices, stigmatization, and the erosion of cultural rights. Delisting the coca leaf is essential to upholding the right to culture, religion, and traditional medicines as enshrined and reaffirmed in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Second, the right to health of indigenous peoples requires states to ensure that traditional medicines and health practices are accessible to indigenous peoples. United Nations and United Nations Human Rights Mechanism have recognized that medicinal plants vital to indigenous people's health must be protected and not restricted through punitive drug control measures. Allowing the coca leaf in its natural form supports the full enjoyment of their rights and prevents negative impact on indigenous people's land and livelihood. Third, the current scheduling framework has generated disproportionate harm without due consideration to indigenous people's rights. The WHO review and the deliberation of this commission offer a long overdue opportunity to correct a historical injustice. Integrating a human rights-based approach, including the meaningful participation of indigenous peoples, is essential for a fair and evidence-based decision-making. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, as you take forward your work under this agenda item, I respectfully encourage the Commission to ensure that drug control measures do not override human rights obligations, and more specifically, international obligations pertaining to indigenous people's rights. A decision to delist the coca leaf, grounded in science, culture, human rights would represent a significant step toward aligning the international drug control system with the dignity and the rights of indigenous peoples.
That was Dr. Albert K. Baruma, Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, speaking on behalf of the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights at the 69th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on Wednesday, March 11th. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We heard representatives of UN agencies. Now let's hear voices from civil society. First, here's Anne Fordham, Executive Director of the International Drug Policy Consortium.
I'm making this statement on behalf of the International Drug Policy Consortium, a global network of 200 civil society and community organizations working to advance drug policies grounded in human rights and social justice. IDPC has produced a new flagship report, The UNGAS Decade in Review, Gaps, Achievements, and Paths for Reform, and it draws sobering conclusions. Despite important new commitments to promote health, human rights, and development in the last decade, the global drug control system continues to generate profound and preventable harm. Drug policies globally continue to drive criminalization and mass incarceration, with people living in poverty, women, LGBTQI plus people, racialized communities, and young people being disproportionately affected. Extrajudicial killings in the name of combating the drug trade are escalating and continue to be committed with impunity. Between 2016 and 2021, the UN reported 2.6 million drug use related deaths. These deaths are preventable through policies that support, don't punish, people who use drugs. Funding for life-saving harm reduction services remains insufficient and is shrinking. Access to controlled medicines for pain relief also remains deeply unequal. In cultivation areas, indigenous peoples and farming communities continue to face violence, forced eradication, and economic marginalization. Excellencies, the UN drug control system is facing profound crises and requires urgent reform. A decade on from the UNGAS, incremental change will not suffice. We therefore welcome the multidisciplinary panel of independent experts. It has a historic opportunity to recommend ambitious reforms guided by the following core principles. First, that drug policy must be fully aligned with international human rights law. Drug control cannot be used to justify violations of the right to life, health, or freedom from discrimination. Second, a decisive rebalancing towards public health, including removing criminal penalties for drug use and related activities and scaling up harm reduction and voluntary evidence-based treatment. Third, embed drug policies within development and gender-responsive approaches, particularly for communities affected by illicit crop cultivation and by punitive enforcement. Fourth, prioritizing accountability, ensuring that serious violations of international law committed in the name of drug control are systematically monitored and addressed. Impunity is no longer an option. The panel's review must be inclusive. Civil society and affected communities, including people who use drugs, indigenous peoples, farmers, formerly incarcerated people and youth, must be meaningfully involved throughout. Their lived experience and expertise are indispensable to building a credible, effective, and just system. Meaningful involvement requires consultations, a call for written inputs, and a commitment by the panel to reflect these inputs into its recommendations. We will soon publish a series of more detailed recommendations on this important issue. The next decade must not repeat the failures of the past. IDPC stands ready to engage constructively to support transformative change. There are millions of lives at stake.
That was Anne Fordham, Executive Director of the International Drug Policy Consortium, addressing the 69th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on Wednesday, March 11th. Now, here's Catherine Cook, Executive Director of Harm Reduction International.
In 2019, member states reaffirmed their commitment to promoting human rights and dignity in drug policies. 7 years on, that promise remains largely unfulfilled. Punitive responses to drugs continue to dominate, rights protections are being eroded, and international cooperation is under strain. Harm reduction has been endorsed by the entire UN system, including this forum, as an essential component of health and rights-based drug policies. Yet implementation remains elusive. By the end of 2025, Harm Reduction International documented a modest global expansion, with 112 countries in diverse contexts endorsing these approaches. Yet deep regional disparities persist, and in many places, availability, accessibility, and quality fall far short. Stigma, discrimination, and criminalization act as almost insurmountable barriers to access, particularly for women, racial and ethnic minorities, and other marginalized groups. The situation is even more dire in prisons. People who use drugs are overrepresented due to criminalization, but services are almost entirely absent. Where they do exist, they are underfunded, difficult to access, and unevenly distributed. At the same time, the global funding landscape is rapidly deteriorating. Harm reduction funding is now critically fragile. The double hit of funding cuts and global fund replenishment shortfall, combined with minimal domestic financing, has pushed harm reduction programs to breaking point and stripped away critical human rights and gender work, community-led interventions, and advocacy. In this context, the push for rapid integration of harm reduction into primary health care is not a pathway to sustainability. It is an equity risk. Equally alarming, the death penalty remains a core feature of punitive drug policies. HRI reports over 1,200 drug-related executions in 2025, the highest number in 20 years, with drug offences accounting for nearly half of all executions globally. Against these developments, the silence of CND and UNODC sends a dangerous message that human rights can be set aside when politically inconvenient. These challenges point to the deep structural shortcomings in global drug control system. We therefore welcome the establishment of the independent expert panel and urge it to examine the use of the death penalty, assess health and social outcomes for people who use drugs, and interrogate patterns of international cooperation and financing. We emphasize the importance of meaningful participation of civil society, people who use drugs, and affected communities in the implementation of the panel's mandate. More just and effective drug policies are within reach, but only if we place people who use drugs at the center, divest from extreme and ineffective policies, and invest in harm reduction and other social justice interventions. We have the tools and the evidence required. What we need is the political will. Thank you.
That was Catherine Cook, Executive Director of Harm Reduction International, addressing the 69th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs on Wednesday, March 11th. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!